Welcome back, everyone. How are we all? Good to see you, not see you, but talk to you and have you listen to me. Only joking. What can I say? It's the end of the year and you guys have been incredible. You've listened to so many episodes and you've left some really lovely comments. And Douglas Gerway. Douglas is trying to get his nose involved. And some great feedback on my episodes, and it means the world. So thank you all very much for a year of listening and enjoying my podcast. There'll be plenty more to come. I've got a few more episodes already lined up. So yeah, thanks again. This episode, well, I'm just going to not even really let you know too much. It's just with Shannon Marlseed, who's an ex-professional cyclist, racer, and now a life coach. And it was a fun talk. I have a lot of time for Shannon. She's super, super lovely Australian. And yeah, it's just a good conversation. So I hope you enjoy it. Let me know any thoughts, feelings, whatever else you have of it. If there's anything that you've taken away. And as always, if you have any ideas of who you would like me to talk to, as I say, I've got a whole bunch lined up. If there's someone who you think would be a good guest, leave me a comment and let me know, and I'll see if I can chase them up. Have a great week all, and Christmas is coming up, so there'll probably be one more episode before Christmas, and then we'll restart in the new year. So have a great week, and I'll see you all very soon. Call it there, I think, and we'll go from there. My hair looks outrageous this morning, because... I just went for a run and just got back. I'm going to pretty much do this lying down, I think, rather than sitting up today. Going to look less professional, but fuck it.
I love that.
Let's keep it pretty chilled. Good morning, everybody. And also, I've got an incredible moustache. So,
yeah, with the handles.
which my wife absolutely hates. Jen is not happy with this facial hair look, but there we go. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Move, Breathe, Live. Today, I am joined by Shannon Marlseed, who, I don't know, we've been online chatting on and off for probably 4 years, 3 or 4 years now, I think. I don't know, maybe you can tell me, when did you give up cycling?
It's coming up 2 years, just over 2 years.
Okay, yeah. So you were definitely still in the cycling world when, so maybe 3 years. It was definitely pre-COVID that we were. Following each other. And so, Shannon, who are you? Why am I talking to you? Why did you start following me, maybe? And yeah, then we can kind of get into the good stuff in just a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, hello everyone. I am Shannon. I'm now a soul expression life coach. That's the work that I do with my beautiful clients. Previous to that, I was, as we just briefly touched on, a professional cyclist. So I was very heavily in that world, in the elite athlete world bubble that you get in when you are throwing all of you into a professional sport. And that's what I did for 3 years pro. And before that, I was, I guess, domestic professional in Australia for about 8 years before that. So my life was cycling up until I retired at the end of 2020 and started up my life coaching business. But
I was going to say, so, and how old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm almost 28.
Okay, so from kind of 16, well, 17-ish,
yeah,
like full-blown, yeah, like in the cycling world.
Totally, yeah. And I transitioned from triathlon. So before I was a cyclist, I was a triathlete. And before that, I was a swimmer. So from about 8 years of old, 8 years of age, I've been like, you know, training every single day sort of thing. Until the end of 2020, where I stopped training completely and entered a completely new chapter of my life, which I was very ready to do and very
Okay.
glad that I've done it. And just, yeah, I've transitioned into motherhood now. So that's a whole new journey for me, which has just been the most incredible, beautiful journey so far. So I'm absolutely loving this chapter of life.
I bet, I bet. And I guess I think that's all probably going to come into this whole conversation
Yeah.
as well, because we're definitely going to dive into the life coaching side, because I've had lots of, I mean, I definitely want to start and just kind of dive into some of the cycling, swimming, whatever, triathlon side of things, and just, I guess, look at like maybe like some of the mindsets around that and how that kind of has probably in many ways kind of guided you into where you are today. But like, I'm also then perhaps looking at motherhood, because I'm sure that whilst I'm not someone, I mean, I've got fur babies, I've got three dogs, but like, as someone who doesn't have kids, like, I'm sure that the your world view and perspective and how you deal with your clients kind of suddenly kind of gets a whole new perspective as well, having a little one around as well.
Yeah, 100%.
Cool.
Yeah.
So obviously you're Australian, like you can tell by your accent. Hopefully everyone can tell. And you guys are obviously a pretty outdoorsy type bunch anyway, especially compared to us Brits. I mean, I've just got back from a 10K barefoot run, and I'm pretty muddy and wet, and it's like, again, crazy hair due to being so wet. But you're kind of, your whole, the Australian life lends itself to that outdoors, like swimming in particular. I mean, you guys love being in the sea and whatever else, but like, how's like, was that very much like driven by you, all of that stuff, especially in your younger age? Because we kind of get the idea of pushy mums and dads and stuff like that, but like, I kind of want to just look at how maybe your mindset started around that, and then how your now professional mindset in the life coaching industry, or sides of things, kind of maybe can view those earlier formative years.
It's interesting that you say about like the stereotype about Australians, how we're very outdoorsy, but I would actually say that Southwest Victoria, where I'm from, it's very rare that you'll see me in a singlet. Like we have had the most beautiful week with our weather, but typically like we're pretty aligned with how shit the weather is with the Brits. Like
I was gonna say,
down
you're
here,
actually pretty
it's
south, aren't you? I guess.
yeah, very south. So yeah, we I can empathize with the wet and the cold and the staying indoors for sure. But yeah, 100%. I've always been an athletic person, an athletic kid. And it's really interesting when you look at the parallels between myself and my brothers. So, yeah, we were like, I guess, quote unquote, pushed into sport. But for me, it never felt like a push. It felt like I've always had this like competitive edge where I wanted to jump in the pool because I saw my friends in there and I was like, oh, they're doing that. I want to do that. Whereas for my brothers, like they cried in the car on the way to squad training pretty much every day because they didn't want to do it. And they can remember it as like being a really, a really shitty thing that they had to do. Whereas for me, I was like, I loved squad training. Like I loved getting in the pool. I was just an absolute fish. We went to beaches on the weekends and during school holidays, and we just body surf in the ocean. So, yeah, always just absolutely loved being like using up a lot of my physical energy. And then it turned into like, I suppose, the dedication of actually putting your mind to something that you want to achieve. And seeing that if you show up every day and you do the work, that actually equals improvement and then better results. So I could clearly see from a really young age that was, that was hardwired into me. It was just kind of bred into me because I started so young. But my dad was also an athlete, and I looked up to him as if he was an Olympian and a world champion, even though he never was. I was like, my dad has like won, he's competed against the world and he's won, and that's just not true. But as that little 8-year-old girl, I was like, my dad is everything, like he's my idol. I want to do what he's done. And he was a triathlete, so hence the transition into that sport.
I mean, what you just said there kind of it really, well, you know, beside the bit about dad, but like the bit just before that about, you know, seeing the results through showing up every day and having, you know, not necessarily just motivation, because like last week I had Nathan Helberg, who's another Australian dude who came, he's like the Zoo founder, but he was like briefly talking about motivation versus whatever another word is, I've forgotten now off the top of my head, but like, you know, motivation is always like motivation is always going to be like, you're not always going to be motivated to do something, but actually having that determination and that drive to go, oh god, like this morning I really couldn't be fucked to get out of bed, like my alarm was going off, like it's one of those light up alarms, so it's like it was getting lighter and lighter, and I was kind of like going, I don't want to get up. I don't want to get up. It's warm and cozy and I've got my dogs and my wife's in the bed. And I was like, no, you've got to get up. And so it was kind of like, right, turn it off, just get up. And so, you know, we can go into the life coaching bit in a bit, but like the way you discuss, the way you were just saying that really kind of made me kind of see, like, or made me feel, maybe it's just in hindsight, but like, you know, that kind of leads you how you can like try to use those same ideas to help people find their own like drive and way in life as well.
And I think the really hard thing with like motivation is that humans are creatures of habit, and we're creatures that, you know, we're always looking for the easy route. We're always looking for the pathway that is familiar and it feels safe.
Yeah.
And the thing about, I would say, most of society is that when you encourage someone to change or you encourage someone to grow, that equals a lot of uncertainty and a lot of fear. So for someone who hasn't grown up with this understanding that when you show up and when you lean in, even when it feels like shit, when you still show up and you still lean in, that equals like your desired outcome. But a lot of people who haven't had that like hardwired into them and ingrained into them, say through sport or even through pursuing other music things as kids like growing up. Music, art, even just like the curriculum of school, you know, some people really drive hard at those things. If you haven't had that ingrained into you, then it's really friggin' hard to understand that, okay, if I push past this zone of discomfort, I will actually get closer to my desired outcome. But there's so much more that goes into that too. And I know that I'm kind of flowing into life coaching now, but
it's all good.
There's an element of having to believe it before it, you actually see it. So something that I've always had as well growing up and as an athlete when I was a kid was I believed that I could do it. I had this unwavering belief that anything was possible, like anything. And I just saw myself as like, okay, I've got two legs, I've got two arms like everyone else. Why the fuck not? You know, I'm sorry, I don't know if I can swear.
Swear. I swear probably definitely more than you, so it's all good. Swear away.
So like I was like, okay, I'm going to pursue this sport. The Olympics is my, that's my goalpost. That's where I'm heading. And as an 8-year-old, I still had that. I was like, that's me. I'm going there.
That's amazing.
If that's the highest thing that I can see, that's where I'm heading. So it was just like, yeah, anything is possible for me. And so believing it before you see it, I think, is also another element that kind of has to be mixed into the ingredients of someone actually, you know, showing up and doing that hard work.
That's, that sounds, I mean, I've just been listening to the latest Human Lab podcast, and it's with like Lane Norton discussing like nutrition and stuff. But you know, as I kind of always kind of try to discuss whenever I'm not really posting a lot these days, but like, you know, just the tie-in of physiology and psychology and just how important they actually all are. And it's all well and good, like me this morning kind of, you know, trying to get up and go for a run because I want to be fitter, faster, you know, whatever reason you want to put to the run. But like, there's so much of a psychological aspect to the whole thing as well. And if you don't have that kind of, as you say, like, I believe I can do this for whatever reason, like it's actually always going to be much harder to find that buy-in.
Yeah. And that's not to say it's like anything to do with our psychology. We obviously have the beauty of neuroplasticity. So yeah, if someone is sitting here listening to this and just going, well, I don't have that, so it's not for me.
Yeah.
Like that's a total bypass. You can actually stretch that muscle of believing in yourself and you can grow that muscle. Obviously there may be some wounds that you need to clear out and some limiting beliefs that you need to clear out beforehand.
Yeah.
But you can actually stretch that muscle and grow that muscle. So there's no bypasses here.
And we'll definitely come back to that one. We'll definitely come back to that idea of like a belief, I guess. I think that's a nice place to be. But, you know, just kind of backtracking a little bit and, you know, you obviously, as you said, you were pro cycling because as you said, you believed you could fucking do anything. And so it's like, you know, you obviously went from tries into SodaStream bottle, like it, getting the old school SodaStream on the go, save the planet with the less plastic. Going into the cycling, you know, how much did that take you, you know, around the world and whatever else? And how much is that, you know, seeing, I don't know how much you see different cultures and stuff, you know, when you are just probably cycling, but I've always found that for me, kind of the idea of travel and being outside of like my little bubble of where I come from has taught me more about myself than like most other things have.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I went all over the world. So America, China, pretty much everywhere in Europe. UK, Australia. Yeah. And I was, how old? I think I was 18 or no, I was, must have been younger than that. Can't remember how old I was when I first boarded a plane to Europe for the first time ever. And I was shitting myself, to put it lightly. I was like, I don't know what I'm about to get myself into. I was traveling with the Australian national team to do like a European stint of racing for a couple of months. And this was before I turned pro. They had a really cool program where we would get exposed to like international racing on the Australian team. And then we'll come back home and race domestically. And that happened with me for about 3 years before I actually turned pro. And yeah, that first flight to Europe and then landing in our base in Italy and just seeing how different everything looked, everything felt, the people were, that cultural shift, it does something inside you, right? To wake you up to like, oh shit, there's actually a whole other world out there. Like, yeah, I've read about it in books. I've watched movies, but now I'm actually in it and I'm seeing, like, it's almost like I just getting this visual of like your mind actually expanding when you go out into the world and you travel and you experience different people, different tastes, different smells, different environment. And of course, it grows you as a person. I don't think you can not grow when you go and you stretch yourself in those ways. And that's just the environment factor, right? For me, traveling, that's what it brought me. But racing bikes overseas for 9 months of the year, I was overseas for 9 months of the year. I had a few like home bases, quote unquote, but I wasn't I think I've actually looked at it, and I was not in one place for longer than 3 weeks at a time. And so the whole time I'm just racing, training, you know, obviously trying to recover, traveling, like massive, massive travel days. And again, that you can't not learn shit about yourself when you're going through all of that. Like you're pushing yourself physically, but then the mental aspect that comes along with massive days of travel, being away from home, not really knowing how to, like, you've got to learn how to ground yourself 100%, because otherwise you just feel like you're so flighty here, there and everywhere. And you know, when we're being controlled by our environment like that, it can become really anxiety provoking. Really, the first year of being pro, I burnt out massively because I didn't know how to ground myself. I didn't know how to use that 2 days in between racing where we're not traveling and we're not doing anything. I didn't know how to use that to actually recenter, reset, recalibrate. So it took me a little bit to actually get to that point. So yeah, to your point, I learned pretty much everything I know about myself
in those
in those short years. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was 17 when I flew to New Zealand, and I spent 8 months in New Zealand when I was 17. And I definitely look at that as being probably, you know, the most formative changing of my life, hands down. I kind of sucked at school. Like, I wasn't bad. Like, I got, you know, fairly middling grades, and but like, as much as I love like studying and reading and what, like, it's hard work for me. It's not like I'm like someone who just takes to, you know, academic work mega easily. I definitely have to work at it. So at school I was just like, man, this is bullshit, I don't fucking want to do this. And I went to sick form and I had a Mohican, and you know, the head of sick form hated me. He was just like, didn't like the fact that I was constantly had a red mohawk and whatever else. So I ended up like leaving and just going to New Zealand for 8 months. And and it just, like, again, like you say, for me, it's, I get quite a few people talk, like, who have got like youngish kids, you know, like teenagers, and you know, they don't know what to do and all this kind of stuff. And I just, for me, the biggest thing is, like, I suggest to people is just, if like school, like, there's such a drive to put people through higher education, which I'm not against. Like, you know, if you've got a drive to do something and you know what it is you want to do, then that all makes sense. But if you're going to go to university just to fucking spend 35-40 grand like in debt to get a qualification you're never going to use, it just seems such a massive waste of time and energy and money. And actually, for me, going as a 17-year-old, my dad always says, when he dropped me off at the airport and I had my big rucksack on, I had my skateboard on the back, I had my guitar with me, and I trotted through like the little, like, through the gates, and he said it was like watching a little boy just, like, you know, kind of wander through these things on his own. And then he flew out like in the December. So I went in the October, he flew out in the December to see, like, for January, basically, for New Year's. And in those 3 years, I'd worked on a farm, basically doing sheep and cattle farming in the, like, rural New Zealand. And he said when he came out, it was like I was a totally changed person. Yeah. And, you know, and it, I expect for you, it was much the same, you know, suddenly being in Italy or Britain or France or Germany, wherever it might be in Europe. And I mean, New Zealand, Australia, New Zealand, Britain aren't exactly, you know, China. It's not kind of totally different, but
yeah,
still a very, very different mindset to the people and to the work and to, I don't know, to everything, I think. And mm-hmm. yeah, I think that's kind of, for me, it's one of the biggest things I tell people is fuck off, go travel.
Yeah.
go explore what life can offer. And like, I don't know, you can't at 18 know what you want to do for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I guess at 18 you had a fairly solid idea that I want to go to the Olympics, but like
yeah, and I didn't, and now here I am.
And are you okay with that?
Yeah, I really am. Yeah, my retirement was like 100% by choice and by feeling really ready to retire, and I think that's something that's super unique with retired athletes. Like a lot of athletes retire because of injury or because they didn't get a new contract or whatever it might be. For me, it was like in 2020, I decided I'm going to give myself 3 months to see whether I still love it, and if I don't, I'm closing the doors. And so I did that. I gave myself the 3 months to go and race overseas and give it my all, like to see if that, because at the beginning of 2020, we couldn't travel, we could go nowhere. So there was a massive period where I was like just anxious, stressed, trying to get overseas, but feeling like I was a bad person because I was trying to travel when the whole world was in lockdown. And I'm like, oh, but I'm special because I'm a cyclist. And I just didn't feel like that was right, but I really wanted to follow my dream and all of this stuff. And I just went through this really tumultuous time and then realized, well, maybe I actually don't want to do this anymore. Like, what do I want to do if I don't do cycling? And then an opportunity opened up for me to actually go and race. And I wasn't super excited about it like I usually would be. So I was like, oh, that kind of tells me something. Like, do I really want to do this anymore? And in the end, I didn't want to do it anymore. And I left the sport with like a real deep sense of gratitude for everything that it's given me. But also with like a see you never. Like I don't feel like I need to go back. I don't feel like there was anything that I didn't get to achieve,
And I guess, whilst, perhaps you, as you say, like when you're an 8-year-old, the goal was like maybe to say the Olympics, but actually, you could probably look back now and go like, I did more than just about every person. Do you know what I mean? Without maybe going to the, being able to race in like every part of the world, like for, the national team and whatever else, like that's still pretty massive. And I think being able to have the mindset of like, I'm done, and actually I've done some pretty amazing stuff with this. I think there's, as you said, like your mindset of retirement compared to a lot of people's is probably very, very different. But actually also being able to be of that mindset of like, I've done so much with my time in my life that actually, I'm kind of ready to move on.
I think that Olympic dream is what pretty much the majority of kids that go into sport, like they see the Olympics as like this hall of fame, like massive climax of your career. And it's interesting because in cycling, that type of event is like not even the biggest event that you can do. Like it's still really amazing, and I don't want to shit on anyone who's been to the Olympics in cycling because it is a huge achievement to get there, right? But the race itself is like completely different to any other world tour race that you get to do. So, for example, getting selected to say race, just to make it relevant for everyone, like the Tour de France Femmes, like the women's Tour de France or the men's Tour de France, that
Is
achievement is like huge.
yeah. Did you do
But
that?
I wasn't in cycling when they had the, they've only redone the Tour de France women's as a stage race. This was the first year. So when I was still racing, I did La Course by the Tour de France, which was kind of like this side gig. So they'd have like the men's Tour de France. It's obviously 3 weeks long and it's massive and everyone knows what it is. And then they would have like this little race on the side for the women. It was
You
like
go
a
over there,
huge.
women. You go over there. Just you do the little race. We'll do the big one.
But it's all changing, and it's
That's
thanks to
cool.
so many people's dedication and hard work to really change that discrepancy between male and female cycling. Still have a long way to go, but
I'm
it's
sure.
actually moving forward, which is awesome.
So do you ever still get the, I mean, how much, you know, are we going to kind of go into your more, you know, we've kind of moved, we've been fluttering in and out of the life coaching. We're going to come to that in a second, yeah. But like, even sort of now, obviously you don't have the drive, especially now being a mother and all sorts. I'm sure you don't remotely have the drive to want to go and compete as such, but you know, is the, you know, are the long cycles still a big part of your existence, or are you like, nah, I'll just go for a little stroll with the kid now?
Do you know something crazy is I did my last race in September of 2020, mm-hmm. and I think I left Europe in October, or just before that. And I left my bike there because it was owned by the team. So when I came home, I didn't have a bike, and I have not ridden a bike to this day.
That's crazy.
And I do not own a bike to this day.
Well, you know, I think you probably did enough cycling miles in those 8 to 10 years that you probably never, ever need to sit on a bike ever again.
I do desire to get a bike at some mm-hmm. point. I'll probably get a gravel bike. But yeah, it hasn't come into my sphere as something that like I have a real yearning for at the moment. Yeah. I love going for runs. I love going for walks. I love going to the gym when I feel called to do so. But it's actually really nice to not have to do like rigorous exercise. Although when people ask me like, do I miss it? I miss being so fit that I could literally do anything. Like when you're training that hard and that long and like doing that much endurance, you are unstoppable. There's nothing that you can't do. Yeah. And so I miss feeling like that. Yeah. And I miss my friends, and that's pretty much
But I guess you then have to swap out the feelings you get from being able to be like, you know, She-Hulk and that with, you know, being a mum and all of the stuff that then brings.
Oh, 100%. And I would make this decision to follow my own passion and purpose every single day of the week. Yeah.
So then, following your passion and purpose, how was it that you went from September, well, let's say October 2020, when you just flew home, left your bike there. How did you step into the life coaching sphere? So it's kind of one of it. I mean, maybe you can just tell us first things first, what life coaching is, because, you know, I think there's a growing awareness of it. You know, people like Jay Shetty's been all over the TV with, I don't know, Oprah and whatever else. So I guess some people have maybe a slight more idea, but, you know, what is it? And then maybe how you went from like endurance athlete into life coaching.
Yeah. So the coaching that I do, the reason why I call it life coaching or soul expression coaching is because humans love labels, right? We just love to label things and make sense of things. But if I get to explain what it is that I actually do, it is to help people overcome or move through or clear out all of the blocks, whether that be emotional trauma, limiting beliefs, past conditioning, our hardwired default patterns that are in our brain that we've carried for decades, to clear those out to actually get to what it is that you truly desire in life and move towards that, right? Nice. Because so many of us have things that we desire, yet we're stuck in this patterning of just doing the same thing every single day over and over and over again, and then getting frustrated because we're not achieving the life of our dreams. And we've also been sold this story of, like, actually when you were talking about school, this is a great trajectory to add what I was going to say to that is, yeah, we're sold this story that we go to school, we go to uni, we get a job, we get a husband or wife, we have some kids, we have the house, we do the 9 to 5 until we're 70, and then we've got, you know, retirement, and that's when we can like
enjoy
really
life.
Relax.
Yeah.
And it's just the most ridiculous,
outrageous
story that exists.
I completely agree.
Yeah. And I'm here to just be a permission piece for people to say, look, if you don't want that you're kind of being zombified to actually be funneled into that life, if you don't want that, then let's go and see what's possible, because the possibilities on this side of the fence are actually limitless. But we've got to do some work, some inner work first before we can get there. So I help people do that work and I help people get there. To the point, again, back to school, I think it was Gary Vee I heard talk about just the whole school system. It's interesting. We've got 7 billion people on the planet who are all supposed to fit into the same
single,
way of learning. And it's just, again, just ridiculous expectations on society, on kids, to all fit into the same way of learning. We know as adults, like, we can see very, very clearly that everyone learns differently, yet we all meant to go to school at whatever time and come home at whatever time and do our homework and have the same assignments and yada, yada, yada. And it's like, maybe we can look at this differently.
Absolutely. I mean, I've this is a conversation I've had like numerous times in this podcast of just like, you know, from a multitude of perspectives, if you look at, you know, essentially the current school model, it was born out of factory, you know, the world of factories in like industrial Britain, essentially kind of in 17, whatever, or what, I don't know. History is not necessarily my strong point. Maybe I should have studied more.
Neither.
But, you know, essentially like, you know, that idea of like factories, you're sitting at a desk making whatever it is and actually preparing kids by sending them to school to sit at a desk in front of someone and like have a, you know, it's kind of that whole setup, you know, it's 250, 300 years old or something. And we're still doing exact, despite the fact that we know that some people learn through like experiential, like hands-on work. Some people learn by reading, some people learn by watching and doing. And you're like, and yet still here we are going, here's a book, read it, write me a 1,000-word essay, off you go, right, brilliant. Now somehow you're miraculously educated and you're like, how the fuck does that like, do you, I don't know, it still baffles me. It still baffles me. I think, as you said, like Gary Vee's like quite an interesting one of like, you know, I find it like, I love some of what he says about you're 25, you're 30, you're 35, you've still got like, literally half your life. Like, even if you're 40, you've still got half your, you can still do anything and everything despite whatever age you are.
I absolutely love that message as well from him. Does that answer your question about what I do?
It does. And so how did you find your way into that from the world of cycling? Like, obviously you know, you've obviously always had a drive and, you know, an ability to kind of go, this is what I want to do, so I'm going to go do it. But like, you know, how on earth did you go, you know, you come back in the October and then you go, I'm going to be a life coach, I'm going to help people work out what they want to do?
So my whole life, again, from a really young age, I've been taught, I've been bred into a bit of spirituality and personal development with mainly my dad, which I think, again, is something that's really unique in my generation. I don't think many people were, you know, listening to audiobooks on the 4-hour drive to Melbourne to go to a competition. We'd be listening to Eckhart Tolle. And we'd be learning the teachings of being in the present moment and power of the mind, and even breath work. Like, my dad taught me breath work when I was really young as a way to help me fall to sleep easier, actually.
That's like incredible.
He taught me how to breathe into my diaphragm and breathe into my belly. And then also before races, he would teach me how to do that to calm my nerves. And
that's unreal.
Yeah, like it's giving me goosebumps now. Yeah. Just understanding that that lesson or those lessons that I learned from my dad were really, really valuable. And I learned them in that age where, again, I was, you know, it's so easy to learn those things when you're 8 years old or younger. It's a lot harder to learn them when you're 40 and you've been a chest breather your whole life, for example. So yeah, I was learning these techniques for my whole life. Right. And also what was happening in my life, I was just always this person that wanted to help people. And I feel like I know now that I've always been able to see the truth of people's soul. So even if someone's done something quote unquote bad, or they're having, or they're angry or they're upset, I can kind of see where they're hurting and go, oh, like I have so much compassion. This is actually what's going on for them. Or being able to have a conversation to ask them, like, what is actually going on? Like, what's behind this? What's underneath this? And, you know, as a kid or as a teenager, that was actually kind of hard for me at times, because I did take on a lot of this heaviness from a lot of people. But as I have grown into an adult, I've learned how to, yeah, have compassion, but not take it on as my own. And through those years of like the treacherous teenage young adult years, I was also seeing a sports psychologist.
Okay.
And then as the story goes, with a lot of people that see psychologists, they might be experiencing, like I was, depression. And I got diagnosed again with the label that we all love. And I got recommended to take antidepressants. And it really enraged me. Like, honestly, it set this fire off inside me that was like,
amazing.
Just because you don't know how to help me through this, you're going to now prescribe me a pill just to like bypass it, just because our hour is up, just because, you know, you've got to get more clients through the door and you don't have enough time to spend on the 18-year-old girl who's crying her eyes out.
Yeah.
And just to make it clear, there is a time and a place for medication. I was not fitting into that box. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no suicidal thoughts. Tendencies, there was no thoughts of self-harm. I was just sad and I just didn't know why I was sad and I needed someone to help me. And they said antidepressants were the way, and I ended it. I just ended that seeing a psych, and I turned a few years later, actually, I turned to a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't even know, again, at the time I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to go there because it just felt like something I wanted to explore. And I was in and out of life coaching for probably seeing a life coach for a few years. And at the end of, or at the beginning of 2020, I started with my life coach then was Nash Mackey.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually helped me transition into doing this work as well.
Amazing.
So I expressed to him, I was like, this is the type of person I am. This is what I want to do. Like, how do you do it? And he showed me how. And he was like, basically, you just start.
That's amazing.
You know, like, you don't have to. And this is a key thing too. Like, you don't have to go and do a uni degree. You can if you want. Like, if you desire to go and do a course around NLP or like any of these things, any of these techniques or tools, you can. But he could see it in me that I didn't necessarily need to do that. So I just started. I just opened up my own business and I was like, let's go.
I mean, I think what you said there, like, it's one of those things of I've, you know, in my world. So I obviously, as people know, but I do like movement therapy type stuff. So I'm not a physiotherapist. Like, I've never been to, you know, I'm a nurse. I've done my sort of nursing diploma and all of these bits and pieces, but like, I'm not a movement therapist. I'm not a physiotherapist. I'm not an osteopath, anything like that. But yeah. I'm working in the same way fields that those are. But, you know, yeah. I've gone and done study with people like Gary Ward and Joe Averson and all these people, and I've built up all of this knowledge base. And mm-hmm. I have a real, at times, like, kind of complex of like, well, I don't have a qualification. And I've always had this thing of like, I need to go and get more like qualifications and tickets. And actually, like, I have a pretty decent knowledge base these days, and I've seen lots of people, and a bit, probably a bit like you in the way that you maybe see people, let's say emotionally, mentally, like spiritually type thing. I kind of see physically very much the same thing. I literally watch people walk, and I'm kind of constantly going, do you know what I mean? And I can, and I think we are a bit like what you said about labels. Like, we, everyone is so tied to the idea of there being a label on something, that actually you kind of do almost fetter your own ability to do something by going, well, I'm not qualified, I don't have like a certificate or whatever else to say I can do it. And most of the time, I was thinking about it the other day, but you know, you go and get a certificate and all of a sudden it means like, yeah, you're good to go. And most of the time, you don't fucking learn really anything in most of those courses. You're just like, yeah, brilliant. I just gave you essentially $4,000 to come out with nothing to everything you already knew.
Yeah.
Not that there's anything against that. And if you do, obviously you have got qualifications, you probably do know more than me, but maybe you don't, I don't know.
I've done one course, an advanced diploma in naturopathy, which, yeah, it was like $30,000, and I haven't used it at all.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I've used it for personal reasons. Yeah, yeah. Like, I know the nutritional or the herbal things that I might want to take if I'm feeling X, Y, and Z, but
yeah.
I've never practiced naturopathy as a practitioner. I've done my yoga teacher training, and I also have never taught yoga. So I can absolutely understand where you're coming from, where I also went through that period of time where I was like, I need to learn a modality. Like, I need to learn neuro-linguistic programming or cognitive behavioral therapy, or I need to learn more about like quantum physics or heart math science, or like, I need some sort of modality so I can tell people like, this is my area of expertise. And what I have really landed in quite recently, actually, is that I am the modality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are my life experiences and my gifts to see people and to talk with people and to help them in my own unique way, that is my modality.
That's amazing.
And no one can teach me how to do that from a textbook. I'm doing it naturally from my life experience. And also, the beautiful thing about coaching is that as I grow, I then evolve, and my clients get to have that ripple effect of that evolution, because I'm going to be teaching them new things that I've just been through.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I find the same in my work, obviously in my movement work, but like, I'm constantly learning more about, you know, developmental movement patterns and all these other bits and pieces, and it all just, and you know, the more I'm learning, like, not through doing more certificates, but the more I'm learning, the more everyone, my clients, are benefiting from that. And it's this constantly evolving journey of like, as the more I learn and get better, the better my clients get as well.
And
I think
it's awesome,
going to what you said about how, you know, you were sitting in the psych's office and being given antidepressants, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing, and then you were like, this is bullshit, and like, they, you know, to me, like, what I almost took away from how you were, maybe you can tell me if I'm wrong, but like, it was like, you're not getting to the reason why. And like, my biggest question is always, in everything I do, every client that walks through my door, it's like, why?
Yeah.
Why? And it's kind of that kind of Socratean, like, you know, annoying little fucking childish question of why? Why? And as adults, we fucking hate it when kids do it. Like, why? And actually, if you suddenly flip it on its head, every time a kid asks you why to any question, you only get annoyed when you don't know the answer.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? When a kid says why, and you go, well, because the sun, fucking, you know, whatever. And then they go, but yeah, but why? And then you go, well, because the earth's, and then you go, yeah, but why? And you go, I don't know. Go and read a book. I don't care. Go away. And for me, like in my movement, in the way I deal with people, it's like people are coming to me, and I've just recently, this week's podcast was like just a testimonial chat I had with one of my clients, because she was given whiplash from a chiropractor who like manipulated her neck. And she then had all of these symptoms, and basically, and she couldn't do anything. She got like diagnosed again with chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, clinical neurology or whatever, functional neurology or something, I don't know, something like that. All of these labels. But essentially, it was because the GP or the doctors didn't know why. They couldn't figure out why. So therefore, give you a label, give you loads of medication, which most of it made her worse. Most of the treatments she went for made her worse. And whereas with me, it's constantly like, why? Why the fuck is this happening? Like, what is going on? And, you know, we've now got to the stage through help from lots of my teachers, me discussing her case and whatever else. But like, we've got to the stage where she's now doing much better than she's been doing for years.
Amazing.
But purely because, like, for me, and it's, and I think it's probably, you know, your question of, but why am I depressed? Why am I sad? You know, why am I feeling like this? And, you know, their answer was, take a pill. Whereas I feel like for you, it's almost lit this little torch of like, yeah, but why? And then like, why are other people feeling like that? Why can't other people find their drive to do the thing that they really want to do?
Oh, this hits like so many yes moments for me. Like, I was that kid, right? And I actually have cleared an emotional injury from childhood around being told not to ask why and not ask any more questions. Like, I'm done with you asking questions. That's it. No more. And so for a long time, I kind of felt like this trepidation around asking questions. And now I love asking questions. Like, I'm back in that space because I've cleared that wound, that it's like, oh, actually asking why is so powerful to get further, deeper into the real root cause of what's going on. And like you say, even today, I had a client earlier today, and he was experiencing some like frustration at work, and we dug deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and it turns out to be a wound from when he was 6 years old, where he lost his father and everyone around him weren't showing him, weren't helping him understand what was actually going on, because he was just a kid, he was just 6 years old, and everyone's grieving. And he was left like basically in the corner, just he's too young. He's not going to understand. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And so we went in and we cleared that. And on the other side of it, he just had massive waves of relief to actually learn how to process emotion for the first time. And he's like, it's 50 years later, right? He's 57. Yeah. And for the first time, he was able to actually process that emotion that he's been carrying around for 50 years. So because we ask as facilitators, you know, in our field, we ask why, instead of just going, oh, you've got anxiety, or you've got depression, or you've got bipolar disorder, or whatever it might be. We ask why and get to the root cause. And on the other side of that, it's just freedom and liberation for the fact that you could actually release what you've been holding on to for so long. And it's the same with emotional injuries as it is with physical manifestations of you know, injuries and stuff. Very like closely related. Hey.
Yeah, definitely. That's that's cool, isn't it? It's like, I don't know, for me, it's like, if there's one question, it's just always why. Always why. Like, I mean, for my entire journey for myself has always just been why. Like, why does my knee still give me shit? And like, I've been through every modality and it still gives me shit. Okay, so why is that? And you know, that's led me to like, everything I do is purely selfishly to try to resolve my own issues. But I think that's you know, I think that's why what drives a lot of us people who hurt and struggle and who help people is like, how did I get to where I am? Shit, that's really helpful. Maybe I can help somebody else.
Yeah, 100%. And that's how I feel with, you know, I'm just even imagining myself when I was in cycling and a lot of my teammates were going through a lot of, you know, the heartaches and the pressure to perform and all of these psychological things that you move through as an elite athlete. And I was
especially
always
at such
there
a young age. Like, sorry to add in that in there, but such a young age as well. Do you know what I mean? If you've got a whole bunch of, you know, I'm going to put out like a whole bunch of 17, 18 year old girls. Like, I'm not saying, you know, you girls have a much harder time of like the hormones than us men do. And, you know, there's a lot going on. And even just understanding, you know, the menstrual cycle in the small bit I do know, you know, going through the different phases and how like progesterone, you know, during the flows and ups and downs is going to affect how heavily you're breathing and so therefore how stressed you feel at a particular time. Like to be 18 and suddenly be having the world's pressure on you to perform on the big stage, like that's got to be so hard to like, and as you say, to then have a psychologist basically go, well, you're just depressed, have some pills, and you're like
so as that person who had been through that and kind of come out the other side of that depression, realizing that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't the label, it was just a period of time that I was going through, which was I could be helped without pills. Oh, and then actually helping other people to just hold space for them and go like, actually, there is nothing wrong with you. How you're feeling is really understandable. You know, let's talk about it and just be that landing pad for people. Yeah, I just got like transported back to that memory where I was sitting there helping my teammates in that way. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, it's a pressure cooker situation when you've got in cycling, it's really varying ages. It might not be all 17, 18. Yeah. But it's when you're living on top of each other and everyone's going through whatever they're going through in life, whether it's hormones, whether it's love, breakups, family stuff, or just not having a great time performance wise, then it can get pretty hairy in those situations.
I bet it can. Nice.
I
mean, I can't believe we've basically nearly waffled for an hour already. It's like, I feel like we haven't even started, which is mental. We'll have to do a part two and dive deeper into it. But as we always do finish, from your practices that you now, well, it can be from anything, I guess, even potentially what your dad taught you about breathing, but I'm sure you've got more pertinent stuff that, you know, perhaps is... I don't know, more what you do now, but you know, the podcast is called Move, Breathe, Live, and it's all about hopefully trying to instill an idea of moving and breathing and living a happier, healthier life, because we all know that, you know, movement is kind of essentially key to health, as is breathing, and hopefully just, I kind of just want people to live a happier, healthier life. So from your perspective, is there anything that anyone who's listening to this could kind of go, oh, okay, yeah, I could maybe put that into practice, you know, just something that, you know, they can try for 5 minutes a day to put into their life and see how they get on with it?
Yeah, the move piece, get up and like literally shake your body like you are a crazy, ridiculous person anytime you're feeling like the urge to do so. So it might be in when you're raging or you're angry, you're just like I just want to like get a pillow and I want to punch the shit out of the pillow, I want to scream into the pillow, or I just want to like shake my body and just be like, to get this energy out, I would absolutely recommend doing that to move those emotions through your body. So emotions are energy in motion. And when we suppress those emotions, they get stored in the body, as you would know, and they often come out as physical manifestations of injury or illness, etc. So if we can actually cut out that part and just move our body to move that energy through our body, that is a high recommendation of mine.
Nice. So basically a bit like a dog.
Yeah, like, yeah. And if you watch animals, like if they get chased by, I don't know, a lion in the wild or something, and they will get all of this fear, and they would, you know, hopefully if they don't die, they'll get up from that traumatic experience and they'll literally like shake their body, right?
Taylor Swift.
Shake it off.
Right? Shake it off.
Yeah. And on the opposite end, shake your body or move your body for pleasure and joy as well. Like get up and dance or, you know, do a yoga flow or whatever you're feeling in the moment to actually honor that desire. There is much to be said for like having the urge to get up and be like, I want to dance, and actually following that, because that energy flows throughout your day. Whereas if we're suppressing those urges and those desires, we kind of just, everyone can relate to this, right? We feel icky, we feel yuck, we feel stagnant. We feel gross.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So put some music on, just fucking dance. I remember like during, just on that note, I remember at like the beginning of lockdown, like in the first week or two, maybe the first 3 weeks of lockdown, when it was still positive, when we suddenly thought that the whole world was going to come together and humanity was going to save itself because by, you know, love and all that kind of stuff. And I remember a mate of mine who's like an osteopath, and he's a super cool guy. But I remember he was making his kid breakfast, I think. And I think he had like maybe some Phil Collins on some Phil Collins came on the radio, and he put his phone on. He was just dancing around the kitchen, like making his kid breakfast. And I was just like, fuck it, I'm doing that. And so like the next morning or something, like, I don't know, I was listening to like Dire Straits or something. I was like literally making myself a smoothie, like dancing around the kitchen. I stuck it on like Facebook and Instagram, and everyone was like, what the fuck are you doing? I was like, I am dancing and I'm having fun. That is what I'm doing. If you don't like it, fuck you guys.
Respectfully unfollow me.
Yeah, exactly. Just go try it. And if you really didn't like it, then yeah, fine. But yeah, give it a go. Yeah. And I bet you'll enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot to be said for it. So that's my recommendation for moving. Breathing. Yeah, I would say this is definitely a tool to get back in the body and out of the mind. So a lot of the time we can be really up in our head, and I don't know if I need to expand much on that. Like people know what it feels like.
Everyone knows what that feels like. Just monkey mind.
Going and doing the hamster wheel, right?
Yeah.
So breath work, any type of breath work, I think you would understand this to be true, can get you just back in the body. Right? It can get you back in this present moment, out of the hamster wheel and just back into this meat suit that we get to walk around in. And when you get to land in the body, you tend to find a lot of those thoughts. You understand that actually they were, you can probably hear my baby, were irrational. Because when we're up here and we're having those hamster wheel thoughts, we're often in that fight, flight, freeze, sympathetic response. Oh, and our IQ just like leaves the building, and we can't rationalize, we can't think clearly, we can't plan. You come back into the body and you're like, oh wow, okay.
Yeah.
I can see clearly now.
And, that was just my crazy mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So that
nice.
Yeah, I hope that lands for people for those two. And the live piece that I wanted to talk about is you can do all of that stuff. You can move your body, you can breathe, you can do all of the things that are right for you. I would urge everyone listening to not use that as a bypass to doing the emotional healing and the work, the inner work that needs to be done. Because a lot of the personal development industry is like, go and meditate, go and journal, have your morning routine, I don't know, have a bulletproof coffee, go and exercise, do all these great things that are great for your body and mind. But we need to do the soul work as well, which is actually going within to understand why you feel the way that you feel and doing the work to heal that. Yeah.
Nice.
And then I think with those, you can then live the life of your dream.
Nice. So on that note then, as we wrap up, where can people, if they want to start like maybe doing some of that soul work, where can people find you?
The best way to find me is on Instagram, and I'm just Shannon Molseed there. You can find me on Facebook, Shannon Molseed. You can find me on TikTok. You can find me on YouTube. You can find my website, but I'm most active on Instagram. And I'm sure you'll have the spelling of them in the show notes.
Everything will be in the show notes. So fear not. So it seems like a relatively reasonable time to wrap up, as your baby seems to be starting to make some noise in the background. So I'll just say thank you so much for giving me your hour of your time for today. And I'd love to chat again sometime. And I mean, I don't feel we like spoke half as much about anything that we needed to, but it was still an amazing hour. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I would love to get on for a part two.
Cool. We'll definitely do it soon. We'll definitely do that.
Awesome.
Thanks, guys.